This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
A thing of beauty there. Yep, that can mean but one thing. It is time for the Sheffield United fan show right here on Love Sport Radio. Blades fans want to hear from you. And even if you're not a Blades fan, get involved tonight at Love Sport Radio on Twitter and on Instagram. If you want to give us a ring or you want to send us a WhatsApp message, 0208 70 20 558. We are, of course, going to be talking about how coronavirus is affecting the Bramall Lane club. But more importantly, on something, on a different note, we will actually be talking about Sheffield United and what's going on at the club itself. There's not really much more important than people's health, is there? I told you I put my foot in it at some point, Paddy, didn't I? Right, joining me tonight to talk all things Sheffield United is James Shield from the Sheffield Star. Good evening, James.
Good afternoon, or good evening, sorry. How are you?
Very good, thank you. I'm very, very good.
Didn't put your foot in it at all, by the way, let me say. I know... Health is important, but everybody's gutted to be losing out on their football as well, aren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm here with Travelling Blade as well, vlogger Blade for Life, with us tonight. Good evening.
Hi, Joe. You all right, mate?
Pretty good, thank you. Pretty good. Right, let's start. Okay, so James, you wrote a story about Dean Henderson recently. So apparently, this loan from Manchester United could potentially be extended and both clubs are in agreement over this. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what we've been led to believe, actually. And I think it actually makes perfect sense, to be honest, because when you look at what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Manchester United obviously said about David De Gea, who is clearly the number one goalkeeper there at the moment. The manager at Manchester United has said that explicitly. Obviously... Dean Henderson, you would suspect, in the coming years, 2 or 3 years' time, is clearly someone they're going to want between the posts at Old Trafford. When you look at what Dean Henderson has said in recent years, certainly over the past 18 months, is the fact that he doesn't want to play second fiddle to anybody. And David De Gea is included in that. Which presents sort of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with some sort of problem, because I think a player who earns £350,000 a week, David De Gea, is going to be very difficult to shift. I think politically, as much as managers might like to say that, you know, everybody's on an even keel in terms of competing for a first team place, that's probably not the exact truth. I think the amount you earn does sort of play into their thinking somewhat when it comes to team selection. So what Manchester United seems to have offered Dean Henderson is the fact that if you do sign an extended contract, which puts that sort of dilemma a little bit back, possibly for 2-3 years, you can decide your future. And I must admit, I think unless a club in the Champions League comes in for Dean Henderson, I think that his decision would be to come back to Sheffield United for another season. So potentially what's happening at Old Trafford now could be very, very good news for Sheffield United.
Let's bring Travelling Blade in here. Do you feel that, well, Dean Henderson, whenever we do get underway with Premier League football again, that he will be plying his trade at Bramall Lane next season?
I mean, it's like, just like echo what James was saying, it is a bit of a conundrum for all parties involved. I mean, it's simple for us. We want him to stay with Dean Henderson. Obviously, he wants to play for Manchester United, always has done. It's his boyhood club, so I can appreciate that. However, I think it's not as easy as that for Manchester United in terms of dropping De Gea or getting rid of De Gea. De Gea, fantastic goalkeeper, arguably one of the best in the world a couple of seasons ago. Not so much now. And not only that, he is making noticeable errors. Obviously, I think because he is who he is and the team that he plays for and the stage that he plays on, it gets magnified more. You know, it's a high-pressure environment. But I think also, as James said, with the wages influencing a manager's decisions in terms of the starting team, I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Man United on a larger scale have got the guts to put De Gea on the bench below Dean Henderson. I think maybe the more passionate, you know, more knowledgeable Manchester United fans would agree with such a decision. Mm. But I think with the fan base that they have, a larger fan base, a lot of them, because De Gea is still, he's not what he once was, but he's still that big name. And I think a lot of the Man United fan base would be surprised, confused, maybe annoyed and frustrated at the decision to have De Gea on the bench with the wage that he's on and the value that he could bring into the club. So it's, I mean, and then Dean Henderson wants to be number one wherever he's at. So he's only going to do that if Man U either able to sell De Gea or have the guts to bench him below Dean Henderson.
James, let me ask you about the mood around Bramall Lane at the moment. I know it's something that all football clubs or all elite football clubs are going through in the UK and across Europe at the moment. But what's the mood? How are the players and the staff feeling? You wrote an article where I think you described them as being in a state of suspended animation. Is that still the feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when you speak to people behind the scenes, and it's quite interesting that nobody actually at the moment really wants to go sort of on the record about what's going on in terms of the dreaded C word, sort of coronavirus. Mm. You can breathe a sigh of relief when I've said that there. It's but it's purely because nobody wants to go on the record, because nobody really knows how this is going to pan out, what is going on. I think everybody's got a sort of a vague idea of what the potential issues may well be if the season, you know, is eventually abandoned or sort of put back for sort of 2, 3, 4 months or whatever it's going to be. But, you know, it's just sheer confusion. And I think certainly from when you speak to a couple of the players, again, who don't really want to go on the record, because clearly everybody's been told to sort of, you know, go into lockdown in terms of sort of speaking to the media as well at the moment. But what their attitude is, you know, listen, all we can do is we've been told that we're going to be playing again in 2 weeks. I think everybody really knows possibly that's not going to be the case when you see what's going on at government level beyond football. But they've got to prepare for that. They've almost got to try and sort of cut through the chaos, sort of shine a light through that and make sure that they're ready, if indeed football does restart early next month, to pick up and make sure that a season that promises so, so much at Bramall Lane, you know, doesn't sort of end in disappointment. And it's a very, very difficult position for them to be in, because, you know, footballers are human. They don't live in a bubble as much as sort of, you know, some of us might like to think they do. They all earn a ridiculous amount of money. They all live different, you know, different lives to the likes of you, I, and most of the people who are listening to this show now. But, you know, they're not immune. They don't live in a hermetically sealed bubble, and they know what's going on. And I think they are in this sort of strange position now whereby they're having to go through the motions, make sure they're ready to play a game in a fortnight's time. But probably in the heart of hearts, knowing that that is not really going to happen.
Do you have any idea how they're training? Because, I mean, obviously they're not training together. Have they been sent tapes or workout programs? I mean, what is the process here?
Yeah, it's and again, once again, this is in a little bit of a state of flux, actually, to be honest, because I did a piece in the paper sort of outlining how Sheffield United have been using sort of technology, to try and sort of protect themselves from any sort of contagion from coronavirus. And I will say, if you look at the figures, I think it's absolutely certain that probably at least one or two members of the playing staff or the coaching staff will probably contract it at some point. But they're trying to use technology to try and limit that in terms of sort of having to report on a mobile phone app their health and well-being every morning before they check into work. But also they're using that, I know, to sort of give the players sort of some training programs, just keep them up to date in terms of what they should be eating, what they should be doing. I don't think that's actually too difficult because they've been doing this for sort of 7 months now, you know, and footballers know how they have to look after themselves. That comes down to a sort of a personal responsibility type sort of standpoint. But Sheffield United have been sending out training programmes sort of via that mobile phone app. And, you know, obviously that's something that the players are going to have to follow because, as we've seen today, they've shut the training ground. They've effectively locked down Bramall Lane. I think most football league clubs and Premier League clubs have done that now. So I think it just basically comes down to the character and the professionalism of the players in the squad. And I think that's one thing that when English football sort of restarts, which it will do at some point, I think that's something that will stand Sheffield United in very good stead because they are. And I know people would sort of or probably will roll their eyes and say that, oh, James would be saying this. They are a very, very sort of professional and down-to-earth and determined and focused bunch there. So I think they're pretty well equipped mentally to sort of steer themselves through this sort of crisis, really.
Travelling Blade, let me ask you, I mean, it's obviously we know there are bigger things at hand here, of course we do, but I mean, it is of course our obligation, indeed our duty to talk about football. How do the fans feel in the midst of all this? After such a stunningly good season that I think it's safe to say has surpassed all expectations, do they feel a bit deflated at the moment?
Yeah, it's a bit, it is a bit frustrating, a bit disappointing. I mean, we're not exactly in the position that Liverpool fans are in. I mean, I don't even know how they feel about this at the minute. I won't be able to sleep, but it has, even though we're not on the line for, I mean, we were in contention for European place, which would have been something to miss out on. We were in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. How these competitions are going to proceed going forward is, you know, as you can imagine, up in the air. But it is a bit disappointing. It's, I mean, the twofold, really. The fact that we've had this fantastic journey under Chris Wilder, which I don't want to say culminating. This was never going to be the end, but had reached this exciting and incredible chapter where we'd finally got back to the Premier League. And yeah, it wasn't going to, we were never going to win the title. There was no promotion at stake or anything such as that. But it was just a brilliant chapter that sort of was a great new way. I didn't want to say like the end of this like this journey from League One to the Prem. And now that that's sort of being curtailed and stopped prematurely, it's quite disheartening. Obviously, the other thing that dawned on me today is about Dean Henderson, about what's going to happen with his loan. Will we ever see him play for Sheffield United again? I don't know, you know, with how the loan deals are going to carry on after once football's restarted. But also, aside from like how well Sheffield United were doing and how that's now been put on a hold, it's just like the social side of it as well, you know, meeting up with like your mates that you go to the game with, going to the game every week. Like, obviously, like you go to watch Sheffield and hope that they win, but just the social side of it as well. I mean, one of the fan groups I'm part of, Donny Blade, to be fair play to them, they went up to Newcastle and just had a day out in Newcastle, had a few beers, and that's, I thought it was nice to see that the social side hasn't stopped yet, but obviously now there's going to be really no fixtures. And it was just, it's got, you know, for some people, it's just one of like their only sort of social outing thing that they do. And it really is a way of life for some people. And hopefully, people don't get too bored over the break, well, indefinite break. And I think that's one thing that's on my mind, is how long is this going to go on for, which no one knows.
And you're absolutely right. It causes a huge mess in terms of contracts, because say you resume the season in the top four flights and whatever, and you resume across Europe, but that goes past the 30th of June when players are allowed to negotiate in the transfer market and loan deals come to an end. What happens is Odion Ighalo leave Manchester United, does Dean Henderson leave Sheffield United and go back to Old Trafford? And I mean, there's dozens and dozens of those implications. Of course, the UEFA meeting is on Tuesday. Premier League meeting is on Thursday. Right, we're going to be back with more from the Sheffield United fan show in a sec.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
good evening. You're listening to Love Sport Radio. It's a Sheffield United fan show. Me, Joe Forrester, here with you. Also joined by James Shield and Travelling Blade, talking all things Bramall Lane. James, something interesting from Sheffield United's official Twitter feed. There was a tweet posted in Arabic, wasn't there? Apparently, there's a development in Dubai, which could be very important for the club. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, and it was something probably because, you know, precisely as you said, Joe, it was posted in Arabic that I think sort of possibly passed most people's notice that we've got a sort of a connection or an interest with Sheffield United. But I tried to sort of shine a little bit of a light on it this week in the Star, and I think the reason is just to recap. There's Prince Abdullah, who's obviously the owner of Sheffield United now, has established a football club in Dubai called Al Hilal United. Obviously, I think most people who understand what's been going on at Bramall Lane will realise how that name's come about. Al Hilal is the club in Saudi Arabia that Prince Abdullah supports and at one stage was chairman of. Obviously, now he owns United. So there's a, you know, I think that was the obvious name to come up with. And having spoken to a couple of people who've been involved with this on the ground, I think what the reasoning behind this is that it's almost, let me put it like this, it's almost like a little bit of a sort of a Citigroup type scenario that I think Sheffield United might be looking at here, albeit on a slightly smaller level, whereby you've got Manchester City obviously establishing football clubs all over the world. And I think we all understand there's sort of sporting and financial reasons behind that. And I think Sheffield United now are looking to do something a little bit similar to try and sort of establish a little bit of a niche in the transfer market, because they don't have the same financial clout as an awful lot of football clubs that they're now competing with towards the top end of the division. And if you look at the sort of the joined up thinking, it almost makes perfect sense, because Prince Abdullah as well, I don't know if many of the listeners all know, has also got a sort of a controlled and interesting beer shop in Belgium. And if you look at the immigration laws in Belgium, they're obviously probably quite sort of liberal, in relation to those in the UK at the moment. But there is a salary cap, or sort of a minimum salary, you know, I should say, in terms of non-EU players going into Belgium. I don't believe, by my reckoning, that is actually sort of the situation in Dubai. So when I say I think, what I mean is I actually know that people connected with Sheffield United are thinking that if we see a player in Colombia, for example, or Venezuela, or, you know, heaven knows where else in the world, that we think may well at some point become a first-team player for Sheffield United, we can sign him, we can place him with Al Hilal United in Dubai, possibly then move him on to Beerschot, track his progress, see if he is sort of ready to make the step up, and then move him on to Sheffield United. And of course, the one common thread throughout these three football clubs now is that there is one owner, Prince Abdullah.
So you bring them in from wherever it is, Africa, South America, whatever it might be, the Far East. They go over to Dubai and play there for a little bit. This then helps their cause with a work permit. But as you say, it's easier to get a work permit should you play in Belgium. And ultimately, that kind of handles the legal side of it in terms of them qualifying to play in England. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because Sheffield United have actually sort of been quite, you know, pioneering actually in this sort of aspect, really. And they looked at this long before probably Manchester City actually did. It obviously didn't garner the same sort of level of publicity. But they were quite proactive in China 10 years ago and actually had a football club there called Chengdu Blades. They bought a football club there under the previous owner, Kevin McKay. But the big problem that they never could quite sort of get round at that point was that, obviously, was the work permit situation. And if there was a young Chinese player who was a really promising talent, they couldn't bring him straight to England because, you know, he had to have played in 75% of China's international fixtures if he was going to get a work permit. And I think, you know, everybody who understands sort of the way that football economics work, will realise that once a player has played in 75% of China's internationals, the chances were at that point in time he was going to be on. He will have been beyond Sheffield United's financial reach.
Right.
So it's a similar sort of type of idea, but I think there's possibly a little bit more sort of joined up thinking behind what's going on there now, and it's a very, very sort of small development in the grand scheme of things. But as I said in the Star this week, I think potentially it's a small piece in what could be quite a very, very large and significant jigsaw for the football club.
That's absolutely fascinating. Let me ask you, Travelling Blade, did you ever think that you would see Sheffield United as the end point in a complex international labyrinth of transfer dealings to ensure you get the best players?
I mean, when I was a crew away at Gresty Road, losing 1-0 to bottom of the league crew, not exactly. That wasn't on the first thing on my mind.
You turned around and you said, one day there'll be a feeder club in Dubai, don't you worry.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be good if something like that could come to fruition. I think, like, use our initiative, like James said, we're up against teams now who've got far better financial capital than us. So I think we've got to use what we have to garner, like our USP, to get hidden gems that other people might not. So if we can use Prince Abdullah's networks and his other infrastructures set up around the world, that would, you know, and if that can help benefit us, long may, you know, let it happen. It'd be great. I think it would also increase, as we've seen, you know, with our foreign Twitter accounts now, the brand of the club is growing. We're garnering support from like Saudi Arabia, Turkey as well. We've got contacts over there. So if we can use, the ball's already started rolling in terms of making us, getting us away from the depths of League One away at Gresty Road to a more established Premier League team. And that means, you know, becoming a bit cooler, you know, with our branding, a bit smarter with it all. So if this is, I think that sounds like a very good and important step in progressing Sheffield United and maintaining us as a competitive Premier League team.
And you mentioned becoming a more established Premier League club. Of course, stunning success this season, and whether it's finishing 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, whatever it'll be chalked up as a brilliant season. What about the difficult second album? Is there additional pressure going into next season, whenever that may be? You're going to look to buy a different type of player. Expectations will have, of course, skyrocketed, if not among Blades fans, certainly among neutrals. Is that something you're slightly apprehensive about?
I remember speaking to someone in the midweek, and I think, I don't know if I'm just speaking for myself or for maybe three other Blades fans agree, but for me now, it's like I'm just still happy to be here, to be honest. I think what will help Chris Wilder and our club is the fact that it's so quick, our transition. League One's still fresh in the memory, so I think we'll still be happy to be here. For me, say if the season ended now, and well, which it virtually has, if we're going into next season, I predict or want us just to be around, I'd say top 10, but just be around that mid-table, competitive, just, you know, no threat or concern of relegation. I imagine a lot of people are going to go, oh, can they do it again? You know, such as Wolves have done quite magnificently given their fixture list. You know, can they do it again? But I think in terms of signing a different type of player, Chris Wilder always goes for characters, right attitudes. The club this week published a video, A Day in the Life of McBurney, and he was in the car saying, when he was at Swansea, saying that, oh, he'd heard rumours that Sheffield United wanted him. He's like, oh, well, are you sure? I had a bit of aggro with Chris Wilder on the side of a pitch last season. He said, oh, yeah, that's why he wants you. He wants the right characters, the right attitudes. He builds a dressing room first and then creates the team ethic from that. And I also think, like any concern, I just go back to the old adage, in Wilder we trust. As long as we've got Chris Wilder, we'll be fine. I can't see getting relegated anywhere.
I think as well that was a really important point to make, because there's absolutely no doubt that as the club looks to sort of establish itself at Premier League level, which we all hope it will do, and sort of historically, obviously, people sort of will sort of realise that the second season might be a little bit tougher than the first, but no matter where they buy the players from, I think the one thing that you can say is that no matter what the nationality, whatever the passport, whatever the sort of the stamp on that sort of documentation might be, I think all of the players, that as long as Chris Wilder and his coaching staff are there, will all have one thing in common, and that's a really, really good character. And I think that's one thing that will stand the club in good stead going forward. Also the fact that I think even throughout their climb out of League One, where, you know, they did have a handicap in the sense that they were the biggest club in the division at that point in time. They had a handicap in the Championship in terms of the fact that there was an expectation level there, but they didn't have the same financial clout as sort of Leeds did or Aston Villa did. But they've shown that they can actually work smart and use their intelligence, actually, I think, to overcome some of those handicaps.
Great note to end on, I think. Thank you so much, chaps. Been really great fun talking to you. Travelling Blade, been great fun talking to you. And, of course, James Shield from the Sheffield Star, talking all things Sheffield United. Really, really interesting talking to the boys there. Remember, you can have your say at Love Sport Radio. Give us a ring. 0208 70 20 558 is the number to do that. At Love Sport Radio on social media. We're going to be talking Swansea next.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.